Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is Thursday, March 14th, 2019. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm in Stavoren in the Netherlands. We've had the hang this week. It's a great group of subscribers who are here for a week. Nina Hein, who writes Food for the Soul, is going to join tomorrow and then on Saturday with videographer Robert Duper, where the three of us are going to fly to Milan to film interviews to celebrate Leonardo da Vinci's 500th anniversary, and then back to Amsterdam on Tuesday to film Rembrandt's 350th anniversary, and then I'm on to Switzerland. So I'll be talking to you from Amsterdam next week, and then I guess Copenhagen the week after. The annual 2018 wrap-up, I'm still working on the last piece to go up into the missing money collection. I want that to be a comprehensive collection, so I have one more piece going up. But if you haven't taken a look in a caveat emptor, I strongly recommend you take a look. I think it's a very, very important piece, but it's quite a collection, so if you haven't had a chance to dive in, please do. Our theme tonight is economy slowing. There's a clear deterioration in economic activity and, I'm afraid, in behavior. The deterioration in behavior is increasing as the pie shrinks. Someone said to me today, for years I prepared for an economic collapse, now I'm preparing for a political collapse. And I think that's sound advice. This could be political collapse with a small p, just more lawlessness around you. It could be a political collapse with a big P. There are people who want to pull apart, you know, whether it's pulling apart the EU or pulling apart the United States, there's lots of forces in place to pull apart. It's worth thinking now about what that could mean to you and how to prepare. There are wide differences depending on where and how you live. I confess I'm pretty concerned about how much of the deterioration is caused or contributed to by the digital systems and EMF radiation. I just posted a new video on the dangers of EMF radiation, and Jason Bodden-Smith is going to come in and speak to the Hang group about the rollout of 5G tomorrow, and I'm going to be very interested in what I learn. The U.S. taxes are due on April 15th, so that means it's likely to be rising tensions either way for the next 4 weeks as all the different problems that are upon us churn within the shriekometer. Having to sit down and do your taxes can be particularly irritating and aggravating. Money and markets. Year to date, again, I'm talking total returns. The U.S. dollar index now up 81 basis points, so 0.81% for the year. If we look at fixed income, clearly the central banks have capitulated. It's definitely risk on. The long treasury now flat for the year. It's down 2 basis points for the year. The intermediate treasury now up 94 basis points, a little bit less than 1%. The bond aggregate up 1.39% and junk flying up 7.15% for the year. So clearly the market believes the central banks will pull them out and the chances of interest rate rising are back down to essentially zero. The central banks have recommitted to softball, and that's not going to leave them a lot of tools if things get tight. But clearly, particularly I think in Europe, they're worried about where the banks are. Remember, they never cleaned up for the banks the way they did in the United States. Big question, will Basel III go forward at the end of the month? They've kicked the can plenty of times. I can't imagine why they wouldn't kick the can again, but let's see what they do. As more than a few of the gold bugs have pointed out, that would be good for gold. Equities, obviously risk on is good news for equities. The money is looking for a place to go. I continue to think, as has been happening for years now, the smart money is moving out of fixed income. The S&P now up 12.5% for the year. Home builders up 17.3%. The European ETF up 11.21. So if Europe is slowing, it's not by much in the stock market. Germany now up 7.77%. The developed markets minus North America up 9.77%. Large caps China flying at 12.21% and small caps up 13.36%. And the emerging markets up 8.7%. Wouldn't surprise me if you're also seeing diversification out of the particularly North American and into the emerging markets. Commodities up 8% for the year, gold only up 0.96, risk on being right now good for equities. But again, I think if you look at all the tensions, gold probably is scheduled to have a reasonably good year, should have a reasonably good year. Silver now down 1.93% and oil flying at 37.58. We had a long discussion at the Hang today. Today was my day to present. We had Ulrich Gonagher present the Wave Genome on Monday and then Neutrinos on Wednesday. Fantastic. If you haven't watched those two presentations of Ulrich's in Future Science, I cannot recommend them enough. It was so wonderful to see the look on everybody's faces. They started to realize how many of the most significant events in our world you don't see. We were talking about how much time we spend monitoring the news and what's going on. Very significant investment. Figure on a per person basis, it ranged from about 200 hours a year to almost 1,000 hours a year. And of course, I'm very heavy on monitoring, so I'm even higher. But if you look at how much time, and it's amazing how many of the most significant developments we don't see. Anyway, if you haven't watched Ulrich's Future Science presentations, I strongly recommend. They're going to be useful for many, many years to come. And then on Tuesday, Bridget did reviewed the wellness material that she covered on the three Solera reports that we've done in the wellness series. And again, I just can't. I think learning how to make sure you're well all the time is one of the best investments of your time. So rather than watch the Shriekometer, listen about how to be well. Anyway, so we had a long discussion today because it was my day to talk about the economy and how to use your media time well. And we talked about monetary inflation and how the financial system had a variety of mechanisms that could engineer deflation. And I shouldn't say just financial system, the political system as well. And you can siphon off monetary resources and direct them in places that won't set off asset inflation. And we discussed many, many of the different tools in the toolkit, but obviously one big one is labor deflation that came with globalization, the application of digital technology, AI, and automation, and significant financial engineering and fraud. I've watched the financial system calibrate the slow burn for years, and after watching all of their tricks, it's pretty obvious that the machinery has been in place to do that. But then the record seeks for itself. Let me just give you a list of the different factors we consider. All of these very deflationary. Global labor deflation, as I said, IT automation, what I call the one-way mirror, the surveillance machinery. Warfare, unbelievably deflating, both covert warfare, including weather warfare and disaster capitalism and overt war. Control files and mind control, very important. The control and arbitration, arbitrage of capital. So small business has a 30% cost of capital and a lot of hedge funds have zero. Big, big difference in engineering where the where that monetary inflation and the expansion of monetary supply flows. Derivatives, very important, especially the interest rate swaps, bringing interest rates down. Financial fraud, regulation, the growth of technocracy, taxes, cryptocurrencies have been very good at sucking off massive amounts of dollars, and energy price manipulation, and then oddly enough, and I hadn't spent a lot of time considering this, but the use of pharmaceuticals and various drugs to depress metabolism and life expectancies. I bring it up so often, I was surprised that several people still were not aware of the Chapwood Index. And I strongly recommend to you that if you have not looked at it, you just do a search on any browser for Chapwood Index and go take a look at it. It's an investment advisor in Chicago who's gone to the effort of tracking the top 50 articles of the household budget and the cost of living index. It's very useful intelligence for you. It makes clear that the average, for example, if you live in the U.S., the average cost of living index over the last 5 years, your increases has ranged from anywhere from 8 to 14.5%. So if you live in Silicon Valley and you're dealing with a 14.5% inflation rate, a 15% pre-tax stock market return, like the one we're getting this year, is not going to even hold you even with inflation on an after-tax basis. It's important to understand. I want you to look at the Chapwood Index because I think it's very important to realize we may not be in hyperinflation, but we're in very serious inflation in terms of cost of living index, cost of living increase. And I think I want you to really incorporate that into your planning. We do have a big problem with the debt spiral up in the U.S. debt and debt spirals up happening around the globe. It's harder and harder to keep the slow burn maintained. And it's why we're seeing in the group that we have here, we have people from Hong Kong, Australia, various countries in Europe, and then several places in the United States. And so what we're all talking about is the extreme and radical proposals that are being put forward on three or four different continents, all of them to radically reduce the resource availability to the general population. We're talking about a major cutback in lifestyles, and I'll be discussing it next week on the Solari Report with Amy Benjamin. But we're living in an environment where there are massive increases in secrecy and lies, and a lot of those lies, I think, are engineered to deal with the sort of hyperinflation that could come if you don't get really radical in terms of your top-down controls. It was interesting. Following one of the interesting conversations I had was one of the hangsters and I on the train ride to Leeuwarden, which is the capital of Friesland, had a long conversation. The biggest variable, the biggest question on the planetary economy, is it open or closed? In other words, are we trading with breakaway civilizations or are we trading with civilizations off planet? And obviously, if it's open, it's a very different kettle of fish than if it's closed. So as a matter of going into the invention room, we said, okay, let's just pretend for a second it's open. What would the top 20 exports be and why? Very interesting exercise. Maybe sometime we ought to have that conversation. I should note that while we were in Leeuwarden yesterday, we heard an organ recital. One of the Christian Mueller was the organ maker who made the very famous Harlem Amsterdam organ. That's Harlem near Amsterdam. But he also made one for a church in Leeuwarden, and we got to hear a beautiful organ recital, so it was very beautiful. Well, Brexit is a mess. It's been a mess since they voted for it. The second proposal was rejected today. The MPs voted down a no-deal exit, then voted to delay until summer. So they're still going to try and exit with a deal, but they've delayed the, they had a deadline at the end of the month to exit with no deal. So there are three options here. One is to exit with a deal. The other is to exit with no deal. And another is to hold another referendum and keep holding referendums till you stay. I think that exit with the deal is likely, but you can't count the other two out. There's a lot of pain and grimacing about this, and clearly it's making it extremely difficult for anybody who's trying to operate in the economy here in Europe. College admission bribery scandal. Normally, I wouldn't talk about something like this, but I think this one happens to be very interesting, very important, and there's definitely a story about it, and there are a couple of lessons learned that it's very, very important to me that my subscribers understand. The Department of Justice has just issued indictments, arrested and indicted a significant number of people, I believe it's 50 total, of both parents and kids who used various sort of illegal schemes to get into top universities. And you also have people associated with the universities, particularly coaches, who are also arrested and indicted and involved. So it's a pretty big sweep. It started with a snitch who, to get out of a prosecution on another case, agreed to basically snitch on a network run by a fellow named William Rick Singer, who was helping essentially wealthy people get their kids into college by a variety of fairly clever mechanisms, including getting them higher SAT scores or getting them in on an athletic sort of avenue. So now if you look at the 50 people charged with conspiracy, so they're charged with conspiracy to commit mail fraud and honest services mail fraud. If you look at the people, they involve a significant number of CEOs, successful business people, and some Hollywood types. Two of the people involved, one is a founder of TBG Growth, which is a division of TBG Capital, David Bonderman's firm. That one caught my eye because TBG used to have a reputation. I'm not current on who they are and what they're doing, but they used to have a reputation for really walking on the wild side and being part of syndicates that practiced some pretty dirty tricks. So whenever you see, you know, the tricksters in there, you think, okay, what's that about? Also in there is the vice chairman of Wilkie, Farr & Gallagher, which is one of the most prestigious law firms in the country out of New York. So we have the co-chairman of a top New York law firm also indicted. Now, it just so happens, if you look at Wilkie Farr's website, they do a significant amount of deal and transaction business for, you guessed it, TPG. And so you look at this and you think, to what extent does somebody want to do a hit on TPG and their counsel, Wilkie Farr? Big question mark. I don't know the answer, but there's a story here, and it's bigger than the story that we've gotten. Now, interestingly enough, this prosecution came out of Boston. Boston is Harvard. It's all things Harvard. Interestingly enough, Harvard is involved right now in serious litigation. They've filed their final motions, and they're waiting for a decision, and it's an action against Harvard, who is said to have been discriminating for African-American and Latin students and discriminating against Asian. And so they're waiting for a decision, and you almost wonder, well, is Harvard hoping to white out whatever comes from the decision with a syndicate of universities who've been doing something far worse? And it's somehow this white out for the case that's coming out of Harvard, not to mention the fact that many of the universities named are universities that compete with Harvard for students. You've got Stanford, Georgetown, Yale University, University of Southern California, University of Texas. It's all remarkably coincidental that it's out of Boston. It's prosecuting people from universities or their universities involved who are big competitors of Harvard, and it's coming out and making major headlines just at the time that Harvard would be worried about the headlines they may get from their lawsuit. In fact, I just posted a headline today. They've just hired a new diversity, or somebody in charge of diversity for admissions. And I will say this, the law is so complicated now that you absolutely need people like this. It's frightening. It's right out of Atlas Shrugged. Anyway, what you look at when you see a partner from Wilkie Farr, particularly the co-chairman, or someone from TPG, These people know that the NSA is collecting and doing surveillance. Why are they engaging in felonies over a telephone? They certainly know better. Now, it certainly smacks of the belief that people have at this level that they can't be touched, that they're protected. And the clear message, and the reason I wanted to sort of deep dive and talk about this, is there's a real message here, and it says, you know, we are now removing the protection and air cover from a certain class of citizens. So what does that mean to you and me? First of all, there's a snitch problem. You have throughout our society, all the way from speeding tickets on up, you have people who see opportunity to protect themselves or to make money by being snitches. And it's very important to understand that the snitch phenomena is gonna start to rise, particularly if you get in a cultural warfare kind of environment. That's number one. Number two, people are angry, and we've seen significant effort with the Q phenomena to encourage them to believe that they're going to see lots of people held accountable or thrown into prison. It hasn't happened. And as it hasn't happened, the crowd is hungry for people to throw to the lions. And so coming into a presidential election in 2020, there's going to be a tremendous need to satisfy the crowd and to entertain the crowd. And to do that, they're going to start taking people, making them scapegoats, and throwing them to the lions. And that's a way of feeding and entertaining the crowd. Now, the beauty of doing this from the point of view of the leadership is by making examples of a relatively small percentage of the establishment, you make it clear you better play ball. NSA has the dirt, or Control Files has the dirt on almost everyone. So everybody's got a foible one way or the other is going to be the assumption, which means, you know, that this is an example to every member of the establishment is, if you don't play ball, this could happen to you. So my intuition tells me there's a deeper story there. I don't know who TPG and the Wookiee far pissed off, but, you know, somebody's decided to make an example. So whether it's remembering about, you know, don't let snitches into your life, don't let snitches into your business if you can avoid it, but don't break the law. You know, we're in a surveillance society, and you need to be as impeccable as possible. And it's one of the reasons I keep pounding the drums about archiving, archiving, and archiving. My paperwork was pretty perfect. And so when I went through 11 years of litigation, I you know, made it through the other side. And that's because I had the documentation and I took the time to use it. Anyway, it's a pretty shocking experience if you're a member of the establishment who gets thrown to the crowd, because what you realize is the crowd couldn't care less whether you're innocent or not. And that makes it unbelievably expensive to document and prove your innocence. And I was lucky I came out at a time, you know, or the crowd went after me at a time when there was a lot less anger than there is today. Okay, a few little this and that's I wanted to mention. One was Sophia Smallstorm has a new newsletter, which is quite interesting. She talks about the racehorses who have died at Santa Anita. I think Santa Anita is now up to 22 racehorses in the most recent season, which has been shut down. But Sophia points out we're getting reports from all over the world of racehorses dying. It's happening in Australia. It's happening in the UK. This is a global phenomena. I'm amazed. I've always loved horses, and I track various horse news. I'm amazed I missed it. And it's quite extraordinary because, as Sophia points out, this is a very significant industry with very significant people running it. Now, she has a theory on what's causing it. I think it's too early to know what's causing it. And there are lots of reasons to have questions. It's a terrible reminder of how toxic our world has become. whatever the cause. And so I think this is an anomaly, which for some people who don't follow horses may seem like a small thing, but I think it's pretty big. So I'm going to try and get Sophia on the Soleri report to explore this even more. But it's one of the things I noticed driving around Europe is how much smaller the insect population is. It's impossible to think of a world that can survive with no insects. And so the toxicity of our world is a very, very big concern. And of course, as you know, I think a lot of that comes from the global spraying and some of the other things we're doing to both the upper atmosphere, the atmosphere, and also the industrial agriculture. Another thing I wanted to point out, there's a new article today in the Wall Street Journal about Steve Wynn meeting with Treasury officials. He sold his stake in Wynn Resorts last year it's a $2 billion sale. And then right after that, he met with Treasury officials on opportunity zones. I keep being reminded to take a look at opportunity zones. It's a tax shelter that offers people rolling profits out of one business. And again, lots of people have big profits in the stock market. You can roll it into real estate in an opportunity zone and delay and defer your capital gains. There's lots of stock market profits being sheltered in the opportunity zones, and it's on my list to look at it. If anybody sees any really good disclosure or research on opportunity zones, I would encourage you to send it. Our interview tonight, I did it last November when I was in Switzerland. I met with Dr. Catherine Horton to talk about why are we financing this. And there is no doubt if you want to bring real change, we have to start connecting the dots between the things we don't like in this world and our participation, financing them with our taxes, with our investments, or our support for different kinds of corporations. If you haven't yet, take a look at the piece I just published for the 2018 wrap-up, Caveat Emptor, where I talk about Treasury securities. But we talk about all the securities that relate to the federal credit. And the reality is we're all financing this. If you have a pension fund, if you have an insurance company, if you have a bank, we're financing this, and we have the power and the right to ask questions and start to shift the financing and certainly encourage the people who are managing that financing to start to do something about what is happening. The conversation of what are we financing can be nice or it can be rough. I see lots of signs out there that this conversation is going to be used and abused. Our quarterly wrap-up for the first quarter will be on ESG financing, and there's lots of ESG financing, which is channeling money into same old, and giving people the pretense that they're doing something about what's going on and shifting their money when they're not. I just saw a little video of one of the new congressmen on the House Finance Committee grilling Wells Fargo about their private prison financing as well as some of their other financing. Wells Fargo has dropped private prisons. J.P. Morgan Chase, I'm sure, out of fear of this, just dropped private prisons. The question about private prisons is definitely one that asks, but just remember, it's not going to stop there. The danger of the radical change being promoted upon us is you're going to have some real witch hunts, and some are going to ask good questions, and some are going to ask questions and go in directions which are inappropriate and not fair, in my opinion. Anyway, so this is a kickoff conversation with Dr. Horton, but it's a conversation you're going to be hearing from me and a lot of other people as we finally drill through the two sides of the balance sheet and start integrating. Our hero today is Peggy Noonan, who's one of the editorial writers for the Wall Street Journal. She's one of my favorite editorial writer. She wrote a great one the other day about why, what the Cultural Revolution did to do terrible harm to people in China and to the country, and why we don't want it to happen in America. It's a great point. And what you're seeing is the kind of weaponization of politics that happened during the Cultural Revolution. So we're weaponizing hate speech. And we've got what I call ism flu, racism, sexism, anti-Semitism. You know, the anti-Semitism folks are doing some serious damage. Anyway, ism flu. Nancy Pelosi is promoting dropping the voting age to 16. The reality is, if you're going to weaponize all these things and you're going to give everybody ism flu, the younger people you can draw into the political process, the better. You can get a lot more support for tax and spend proposals. And I'll even call it weaponizing unreasonableness. All this gives the deep state the ability to keep the secrecy and lies going. And so they need a much louder shrieker meter. And to say this is all going to double down on the shrieker meter is the understatement of the year. Let's go to the movies. I wanted to review Remastered, The Two Killings of Sam Cooke. It's an excellent new documentary about the life and death of one of the great composers, singers, and entrepreneurs of the 60s. Sam Cooke was murdered under highly questionable circumstances. It was in 1964. I believe it was a setup. I'm not sure whether it was the corporate guys or the intelligence agencies. It's remarkable how many performing artists, I believe, have been killed by covert methods. And it's also often related to controlling their work or making their work more profitable in a variety of ways. The Shriekometer really tried to hang this one on Cooke and tried to destroy his name and legacy. In part, I think it was to control issues related to who owned his work. But the reality is Cooke was an immensely talented composer and singer, and Remaster does a good job of really describing the power of his talent and his contribution, and it continues to this day. If you haven't discovered Sam Cooke, you're in for a real treat. Ask Catherine. Dear Catherine, thanks for mentioning Sam Cooke in a recent Salera report. Here are a few clips in case you have not seen them. Very inspiring. There's even a clip of Tina Turner talking about meeting him and his influence on her. These are really great links. I can't thank you enough for sending them. Good stuff. I hadn't seen that one of Tina Turner. Somebody sent a new link for Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and sort of how she got chosen to run and how she got elected. And it's a very good example of how these kinds of things worked, and it's worth watching. So I've reposted. Then someone also sent one of a great interview by the Real News Network with Wilkerson on Venezuela. So I also reposted. Thank you. Dear Catherine, here is some good news. The United States can and should be driving force around the world for freedom, human rights, and peace. This does not mean we should turn first to war and violence. Okay, that's another link which I posted, and another one on about Wilkerson and Jay. Okay, that's it for this week. In closing next week, a great interview with Amy Benjamin from New Zealand on the Deep State's Next Harvest, Tax and Spend. I want to underscore it again. If you look at the proposals being knocked around in Congress or knocked around in various countries in Europe or around the EU or being knocked around in Australia and down under, it's pretty frightening. Technocracy is on the rise. I need to do a Salieri report on technocracy. If you haven't taken a look at Patrick Wood's book on technocracy, I strongly recommend it. Because the push for technocracy by the deep state is truly upon us. Then March 28th, we're going to be talking through the story of Gideon with Thomas Meyer. As many of you know, I quote the story of Gideon a lot, and I finally realized, okay, I need to sit down and do one serious discussion so that it's like a little building block. We can all go back and use that. But I'm finally going to give you a full-length description of the story of Gideon. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Good night and good luck.